Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido. No lo celebra, por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey. 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. This time not with James from Gunnerblog, who is somewhere between Wales and London, maybe somewhere in a deep dark hole, given how good yesterday was for the Arsenal. But I'm delighted to have Tayo Papula here. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
I'm delighted to have you here. I'm actually in your house.
There is that. Yeah. It's let's call it. We've got the pastries. We've got. Let's get this on air, shall we? Hang on a sec. We've got a sound that we need to share with everyone.
Let's do it. Yes, we have the Prosecco. It's gone all over the table.
It's gone all over the table.
You have shot your load all over the table.
At the start of the podcast. But yeah, it's lovely to have you here in East London for a very special Arscast Extra the morning after...
The day before.
The morning after the very sad day before. I mean, sad, but lovely as well. How was it for how was it for you in general?
It was... What's the word I'm going to use here? I mean, emotional doesn't seem to quite get to it, you know. I saw a lot of people asking us, did you cry? A lot of people cried, I think. I didn't cry, but I did feel obviously very emotional and very touched and I think heartened by the reception and heartened by the way people stayed behind. There was that worry, wasn't there, that people might just kind of leg it after the European disappointment and everything else, but... Oh, apart from a few stragglers who decided they'd leave, the stadium after kickoff when the players were gone, it just stayed full and the atmosphere was fantastic throughout.
I don't think there was any real doubt that people would stay and show, you know, essentially show their appreciation, really. It was, it's the heart of heart who wouldn't, of course. Yes, we know it's anyone's opinion and they can do what they like,
yeah.
But it would have... I can speak for why. Yeah, all I wanted to do was just to say thank you to, you know, to someone who in the main has brought nothing but enjoyment, but also has put heart and soul into it. You know, I mean, it's really, we get caught up in it. You know, we're here, we're football fans. We're doing this off the back of the game that, you know, we're doing this talking today off the back of, we're part of the noise, is what I guess I'm trying to say. We're part of the noise that is around the football club and is around what, you know, because of social media and so forth these days. But really and truly, at the heart of it is a man who sort of just tried to do his best. I think Gunnerblog said yesterday, James said his favourite Arsene quote is when he goes to heaven, he'll just say, I try to win football games.
And it's not as easy as you think.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's the absurdity and the and how serious it is all in one go. So yeah. I agree. So yesterday was a chance to just be really, really grateful and hang out with loads and loads of good mates. Just before we started, I was just saying that, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm Block 32 was great. Everyone was in a good mood on the way there. Had a lovely chat with Dave Hollick as usual, and just everyone was in a good space. And yeah, it felt like a good time to be an Arsenal fan yesterday.
Yeah, I think the mood was really interesting as well, wasn't it? It was celebratory. It wasn't funereal in any way. There was no sense. I mean, people gathered because they knew this was going to be like akin to a wake in a way, because it was the final game of Arsene Wenger at home, but it was good-natured. I met loads of people before the game in the Tollington, people who come from far and wide, from all over to just be there. Some people who didn't even have tickets, they just wanted to be around to soak up the atmosphere and to just hang out with other Arsenal fans and to share what is, you know, I'm not going to say the biggest moment in our recent history, because we've won things and we've done a lot of good stuff. But when a manager of 22 years is leaving, it's kind of seismic, and it's an occasion people will remember. And I was really glad, first and foremost, that as an occasion, it was, I think, pitched pretty perfectly. There could have been, couldn't there, they could have done it in a more overly sentimental way. It would have been easy to go towards the mawkish. It would have been easy to make it a bit saccharine. And I don't think there was any of that yesterday. I thought what the club did in terms of how they presented it, how they managed it on the day, before the game, after the game, I thought they got it really spot on, and that was great.
Yeah, and I mean, you also have to know that the man himself would have had a say in that. And I think there was word about not too much fuss before the game because look, we've still got a game to play. And afterwards, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I remember when Highbury closed, perhaps it wasn't as much. It was a bit more mawkish, and it was I don't think it was as pitched as well, kind of thing. So, but the old players there was a really, really class touch. And I mean, it was Bob Wilson who set me off, I can't lie.
Yeah.
Bob Wilson and Pat Rice out front, first of all, it just made me really, really proud of the club, really. You know, the fact that it stretches back that far, the fact that Bob Wilson spoke so warmly about, you know, said the greatest manager. I mean, he had a fairly decent manager himself. Him and Pat Rice were part of a fairly decent team.
Won the double.
Yeah, absolutely. So I agree with you. It just felt like a really good occasion. I quite like the pictures actually that came down.
The kind of weird balloony things.
It was pretty special. And part of me being like, I think I got there and said, all right, let's not get the Burnley one up script, and then and then the 78th minute equaliser, and then the mad push, not for this last game, even though that would in itself be fitting.
Yeah.
We won 5-0. By the way.
we might just talk about that very, very quickly for a sec, because that did play a part in how everybody felt. I mean, in some ways it felt like everything was falling into place, if you like. Beautiful weather, sunny day, that helps. That really helps with people's mood. If it had been pissing down with rain and cold and we'd lost 2-0, I think it would have been a slightly less enjoyable occasion. But because the sun's out, because everybody's in good form, they've had a couple of beers, they're ready to celebrate. The team played well, scored some good goals, won 5-0. Arsene Wenger even got involved with a little header. That was brilliant.
Little back header, yeah. Love the purr stuff. Stuff for next season. Can and will Aubameyang and Lacazette play together?
Yeah,
I think you mentioned it in the blog this morning, the movement for the first goal. Aubameyang just appears out. I mean, he's pretty far back when the ball goes out wide. And he's looking lovely. Lacazette's finish was tidy. If only that Welbeck rocket had gone the other. I mean, he larruped it, and I was like, just thinking, it's those kind of sliding door moments, you know. Like if Ray Parlour's goal against England count, Ray Parlour's goal for England counts, then does he have an England career? Yeah, if Welbeck's rocket goes in the most un-Welbeckian way as well, do you know what I mean? He just said, I'm going to have this. And like, he almost, the kind of arrogance that you'd expect from a Drogba or a Thierry, really, just for that moment, because you don't normally see that. And by the way, Iwobi scored. I mean, that was my that was my proud Nigerian moment. and he's kind of struggled. So it all came together kind of really nicely. Although, while we are talking about the game for a moment, there was a bit of a, the comedy at the back showed itself a little bit in the first half. I think there was a point where, was it Xhaka and Bellerin kind of did a sort of Charlie Chaplin-esque coming together in the ball? Whatever.
Possibly. I've forgotten. All I can think of about our defending is, Callum Chambers and Konstantinos Mavropanos. I'm looking at it going, yes.
Could it be?
Well, that was
nice, wasn't it, Andrew?
Yeah.
Because you saw Mavropanos crunching into people.
Yeah, he's clever. I watched him because I was sitting in the upper tier, quite near the front, and I watched him deal with whoever the forward was for Burnley. I know Ashley Barnes went off.
It was Sam Vokes, wasn't it?
Sam Vokes. He's clever, Mavropanos. If you watch as they're jostling to win a header, just right at the last minute, he uses a bit of strength, a bit of shoulder, a bit of elbow, but, you know, just to nudge his man out of the way. And he won a lot of headers. He looks calm and assured on the ball. He's 20 years of age. He's come from a Greek team that nobody's ever really heard of. It's a step up, and I know it's early days, but, you know, I think it all just fed into part of the day. This, you know, if we're talking about Arsene Wenger going, what we're talking about as well is a renewal, right? A rebirth in some ways of Arsenal. And if we can see some of these young players be part of that, I think it's a, you know, apt for the occasion that was in it.
100%. I mean, there's nothing that we like more than to, you know, a couple of tackles going, a couple of headers going. I mean, Keith was up and Keith was ready to marry him. He's changed his name to Stavros, and he was ready to marry him after the first time he put down Sam Vokes. But, and that's something that we've been really lucky to have over the last 22 years, is that feeling of watching a new person come through.
Yeah.
And it might be a false dawn, you know, let's call it the Giroud dilemma, you know, we have seen this before, of course we have, but it is nice to end, and that's what end of seasons used to be like, didn't it? Like, yeah. When you'd see someone new come in for a little bit of a cameo, and it just kind of puts a little pep in your step for next season, really. So if he can kick on, if Chambers can kick on, if a new man can make Chambers, Holding, and, you know, this Mavropanos and part of the first team squad, then that's the kind of hope that we haven't sort of had for a little bit.
Yeah.
It was a shame seeing Koscielny on crutches at the end. It felt like something really significant had happened there. But as you say, you know, it's great to see new people coming in and giving us some hope.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we have to talk about Per Mertesacker then, if we're talking about defenders. I watched him warming up. He was warming up. He was waving to the crowd. Crowd were getting right behind him. Arsene Wenger brought on Ramsey and Welbeck, and he brought Mertesacker over and said, bring you on in a few minutes. We score the fifth goal. At that point, you know, it's safe.
It's,
I think,
time.
It's safe. Yeah, we can pretty much guess that we're going to win this game. Bring Mertesacker on. The reception was amazing. Amazing. You know, this is a guy who has barely played this season, but who retains, I think, such goodwill from Arsenal fans. I know there were some people who were perhaps critical of the interview that he did and the reasons that he gave about why he was retiring. I think he was very brave and very honest to talk about the issues that he's faced. But, you know, he scored in cup finals for us. He kind of got what it means to be an Arsenal player and an Arsenal captain. And I thought it was great. You know, the cheers were fantastic. Every time he got the ball, won a tackle, it was like we'd scored a goal. A great way to send him off as well.
I couldn't agree more, Andrew. I think on that interview, there is a bigger problem. And you can be on whichever side of the line that you are, and it's clear which side I think I am and where you are. I think showing yourself as a human being shouldn't be anything to be turned around and criticised for. And that interview, like you say, it was brave. It was a man saying that I'm not a machine, we're not machines. And we think about football two-dimensionally. That's what I was talking about at the beginning. We talk about the noise around it.
Yeah.
And we want results. We want our team to win. And of course we do. But there are human beings involved. And I got a message from a mate this morning who had to miss the game yesterday, who just said, just about Arsene Wenger, he's just a fabulous human being. And the same sentiment, I think, showed itself with Per Mertesacker. He's by far and away not the best central defender that we've had, but he's got the club. He's, you know, he's supported the club, and he's staying with the club, and he's showed himself to really care about those kind of values. And I think, yeah, the reception kind of shown that. So any criticism of his reasons or whatever, I think, it's two-dimensional and short and a bit mean-spirited, really. So, yeah. And yesterday there wasn't any of that. And I think you said on the blog again this morning, when he went down for that tackle, it was kind of like, it was a last-minute winner. And do you remember when they were playing it around a bit at the back, thinking, come on, no, not today. Not one of them. You know, would he smile it off, or would it just be, you didn't want like him and Cech to mess up and no. and for Sam Vokes to score. But yeah, that was really lovely. And if that header, if he'd made that header, didn't get close. I mean, in reality, he didn't get close to it. But
we were all just cheering at the possibility. That he might.
Everyone around me, I think everyone was doing, stay up.
Yeah. Get it in the mixer.
Yeah, and then the ball came across. Oh, a nice moment for Kolasinac as well to send. I mean, you got to love a grass cutter. You've made your feelings known before about what's a good goal or not, and like when a keeper gets a hand to it, it just takes it off you, doesn't it? But I'm on record for loving a look away pass, but I do also love a grass cutter goal.
I like those. You know, I like lots of goals. You know, I thought Kolasinac scored a belter. It reminded me of Podolski, kind of goal Podolski scored. You know, giving the ball in that position, and he can really hit it. You know, you look at Kolasinac and Mavropanos on the left side of that defence. There's a burliness there, isn't there? That hasn't been part of our team for quite a while. What did you make of Jack Wilshere? Is this maybe the last time we're going to see Jack Wilshere at the Emirates Stadium?
I did wonder. I mean, it was a funny because normally with the lap of appreciation, you start trying to working out who's clapping the most, who's walking behind, who's showing the most. But of course, all the focus was on Arsene. I don't know whether I was speculating yesterday that maybe the flip of maybe the change of management might make Jack Wilshere think twice, but I mean, I don't understand the situation. Is it on him now or is it on the club?
I think there's a contract on offer which he hasn't deemed suitable to sign, so
yeah.
If you were him and Everton were going to offer you a shit ton of money, way above and beyond what Arsenal are offering you, and you know you're a player who's got injury problems, whose top flight career is probably a little bit more finite than some other players, if you've got one big move left in you, then maybe that's what you would have to do as a person, as a footballer. You know,
as a person, as a footballer, yeah. But you know, with Sam Allardyce at the end of it and mid-table mediocrity almost as a certainty, Arsenal puns aside on that, then I'd think about it. I mean, one thing that I think will be evident next season is that the very broad shoulders of the man who's been there to take the flak will be removed. And a lot of players, not to say the boardroom, I'm sure we'll get to that, not to say in the boardroom, a lot of people are going to be exposed next season and will have to step up because the man who is giving them as players trust and time again to prove themselves above and beyond, maybe too much because he treats his players as well as he does. I think that was something as well which set me off with. I've got an affinity with George Weir and the story that Bob Wilson told about George Weir just kind of... I mean, I just went at that. But, you know, he's given Jack Wilshere chance and chance again. And, you know, maybe Jack Wilshere could stay or should stay and prove that he does deserve to play more for Arsenal with somebody else in charge who hasn't been nurturing him since the age of 14 and has said, look, I know what you can do. A new manager is going to come along. You could say this for a lot of the squad, a lot of the first team. A new manager is going to come along and look at them on their just on their merit, not on the fact that he knows what they can do.
Or he likes them. Yeah.
You know, and this is someone who does that all the time with players. I know what you can do and I'm going to try my best to get it out of you. Similarly, he knew, you know, and that means in the same way that he's stayed on too long, he's kept players on too long because he's seen something in them. So, you know, maybe Jack Wilshere with a contract on the table should stay and show that he is worthy of being the Arsenal player that he and everyone else wants him to be.
Yeah, well, look, we'll see. We'll find out soon enough. I think we're going to find out a lot of stuff pretty quickly, aren't we? The season is over on Sunday. And, you know, as soon as the season is over, you need to start making preparations for the new season. So I think we'll get decisions on Jack Wilshere and obviously a new manager. But we might leave talk of a new manager until another day. I'm not sure. It's quite where my head is this morning. I'm still...
Not at all.
I'm still like... I won't say basking, but it was just so lovely. I was really glad to be there. Like, you know, I went to Madrid in the week and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed their stadium. I didn't enjoy the game so much, but you know,
you go and you're with your mates and you have the social occasion, and I think sometimes it's easy to ignore that part of what football is, or part of what being an Arsenal fan is. It is the games, it is the players, it is the manager, it is the results, but it's also all the ancillary stuff that's part of it, the experiences that you have, the people that you meet, the friendships that you develop over time. Those are invaluable. They're just part of your Arsenal supporting experience, whether you're going to a game or whether you're meeting with mates in a pub on the far side of the world. It is just part of it, you know, and that's why I think yesterday was so lovely.
Yeah, well, I mean, summed it up perfectly. And I think you're talking about, we want to win games, of course we do, but, you know, you want to enjoy the experience and you want to understand the hard work that people are trying to put in. I mean, all the players are trying to do, and it's hard when you're criticising players, and we've all done it. All these players are trying to do, all this man or the manager, all they're trying to do is to win games. They want to win as much, if not more so, because they're the professionals, we're the watchers, as much as we do. And but it is just part of the experience, because, you know, I mean, we're sitting here doing this because of 11 men kicking a ball about for years. You know what I mean? It's absurd, but it's brilliant. It's that kind of unbelievable belief. You know,
unbelievable belief.
Yeah, and long may it continue.
Yeah, so look, the final whistle went, and, you know, I spoke to people before this, before the game, and I spoke to people in the build-up to it, and they were saying, look, I hope whatever happens, you know, the stadium is full. I hope there isn't, like, a, you know, too many people who decide, look, my relationship with Arsene Wenger is done. I'm not here to celebrate him anymore. There are, like, you know, like you said earlier, there are people like that, and that's perfectly, they're entitled to that opinion. But I think for an occasion like yesterday, it was really amazing to see so many people just waiting in the stadium, singing songs. I mean, from the start, it was like the repertoire of Arsenal songs. Every song you could ever think of, some good, some bad, some, like, don't sing that, guys, please.
But <Yeah. laughs> there was quite a few. I mean, I know we said we'll talk about managers another day, but Vieira was sung for quite lustily, wasn't he, on more than one occasion.
Thierry Henry as well. Thierry Henry's song rang out. He wasn't there. I thought that was a little bit surprising.
I wondered whether he was in. I mean, was the
he
game,
was working for Sky.
Right.
But I reckon if you're Thierry Henry and you say to Sky, you know, it's Arsene Wenger's last game at the Emirates, I'd like to be there. Maybe he felt like he might take some spotlight away from him, so maybe that's part of why. I just thought it was a little bit of a surprise that he wasn't there.
I was wondering where he was. Yeah, was I mean, I didn't see. I'm sure he was there. Ivan Gazidis. Did you? Ivan Gazidis, was he there?
I didn't. I assume he was in the director's box.
He kept a very low profile. We did you see Il Duce? Like, does anyone know who that... I'm going to show you a picture of it. This is makes terrible radio, but I'll put it up on Twitter afterwards.
Okay.
There was one absolutely... Because we, as anyone who doesn't know, we sit sit behind the opposition managers and next to the press box.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, we are underneath the director's box, which is obviously... Which means that they regularly get Keith's anger... He just turns around, literally shakes a fist. But there was an absolute bruiser in there, standing there like that, not clapping. Oh, I'll put it up later. Does anyone know who...
Well, I don't know who that is.
I'll put it up later on, and then we can find... And we can ask the question.
Yeah. Shame. Yeah, that is a bit Il Duce, all right, isn't it?
Yeah, Keith directed his anger at the Cronkies and said, I'm not saying anything to him. He looks like he'll pulverise me.
Pick your targets, yeah. Pick your targets. I mean, look, let's touch on that before we talk a bit more about Arsene Wenger. They start the celebrations because obviously they're paying tribute to Vic Akers, a man who has also given a lot of years to the club and done great service, both to the first team and the Arsenal ladies, as they were the Arsenal women's team, the most successful manager in women's football, I believe, Alex Scott, who was retiring, has had an amazing career. I did enjoy the Tottenham Hotspur She's Won More Than You
fantastic
chant.
Yeah,
brilliant, wonderfully timed. Per Mertesacker, he was there to mark his final game as captain. But when, I think it's Nigel Mitchell who does the Arsenal podcast and does the pitch side announcements, I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sir Chips Keswick." And it was like, "Boo!" And it was not a minority of people in the stadium booing. It was not. It was, I'm not saying it was the majority either, but it was a fair chunk.
I enjoyed that, Andrew. I can't lie. It was.
It didn't spoil anything.
It didn't snow.
It was a little bit like awkward, a touch of like, you know, sometimes when you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm and your toes are a bit like, oh no.
It was a bit scratchy, yeah. But he, you know, being the consummate pro he is, he just sort of stood ramrod straight and mm-hmm. just kind of wore it. Look, that's their role now. And Stan Kroenke had and Josh Kroenke had their brief moment on the screen as well was met with a say, "Yeah, boo!"
Quick, change your camera.
It was a nice bit of pantomime. But you know, like I said, the broad shoulders are going to be gone next season. Oh, let's just get the bubbles in there. Yeah. But you know, their barrier is removed next season, and we'll never know until the book. We'll never know just how much was Arsene Wenger and his enormous salary, which everybody always wants to talk about and always has a problem with. We don't know how much he just decided to take on. Mm. And we have to see progress next season. We have to see the right appointment made. We have to see money being made available. Mm. And how much of that is down to a board who have let Arsene Wenger take the majority of the criticism, and how much of it is down to the handcuffs perhaps that they put on him. We're going to find out soon enough.
Yeah, for all the criticism of Arsene Wenger, it was very telling, I think, yesterday that when fans wanted to express some displeasure at why we are where we are, I mean, we can celebrate a momentous occasion and how much goodwill there was, but the underlying reason for this is that, you know, Arsene Wenger is going because things haven't been good enough. They chose to express that at the board and not the manager. And to be fair, the manager has taken all the hits down the years. So they've changed the dynamic now. They've put this football structure in place, the Sven, the Raul, the Ivan. They're the ones that are going to be judged now, because they won't have the shield of Arsene Wenger, of this supposed autocrat who makes all the decisions with an iron fist, you know, iron fist in a velvet glove, maybe, but that was it. Everyone always said it's Wenger who makes all the decisions, and that was true to a large extent, but now they've changed it and they'll be judged on those decisions. So good luck to them.
And by the way, the fact that there was such an outpouring of emotion and gratitude for the manager yesterday, it's not impossible to have to show that outpouring of emotion and gratitude and also to recognise that it's time for Arsene Wenger to go. I think Daniel Storey said that from Football 365 put it more eloquently than me. But
he was reacting, wasn't he, to something that was said by, was it Oliver Holt?
I believe that's his name. I didn't see the tweet. I am one of many who have been where the privilege of seeing his wisdom has been removed from my from a long time ago.
Voluntarily, or it was inflicted upon you?
I think many years ago, I might have commented about that you could smell the alcohol in one of his inane rants, and from that moment on, my access to Oliver Holt.
Oh well, I'm sure your life is
it went on.
Yeah,
it went on, but I mean, on that point, it's the reaction of a man who wants some attention on a day which has got nothing to do with him at all.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Absolutely, because you can't fundamentally misunderstand football and football fans that much if you're a football columnist and a football writer, right? That it is possible to think it's time for change, but also be hugely appreciative of a man who's given you some absolutely amazing moments and great times as a fan. And you can say, look, that stuff that we were frustrated about, it doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter because the change is happening. So we can just focus on all those good things.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's the amplification of social media and, you know, if and TV mean that if 100 people are shouting one Arsene Wenger and two people are holding up a banner, then the amplification of the negativity goes around the world much quicker. And I don't think it's fair to say that the majority of Arsenal fans are being hypocritical or anything like that, because it's nonsense. And perhaps we've just legitimised it by talking about it. But I would also feel like, you know,
it's fuck that guy.
Yeah, it's also something that I want to say. So that's dealt with, and
Well, look, then you know, Arsene came out, and there was a guard of honour for him, and he stood on the pitch. You're crying already. Honestly, I didn't cry. I don't, you know, I'm not that kind of a cryy person. Some people who cry at adverts, you know, I'm not that guy. But, you know, it was impossible not to be touched by it. It was impossible not to get those little shivers down your spine when he talked about, you know, I'm like you, I'm an Arsenal fan.
I bet you didn't even cry at the end of season 4 of The Wire when Dukey left.
I'm
Mikey.
Rewatching it, man, and I've forgotten so much. It's like a new experience for me.
What a feeling that must be.
I know, so no spoilers.
All right, my girlfriend has said that she'll watch... She said to me the other day, do you mind watching it for the 10th time if we start from the beginning?
The 10th time?
I've seen it 9 times, yeah. So I'm like...
I like how you've kept count.
I do it by the girlfriends, and I've watched it with 9 different girlfriends. No, you're not the cry kind. That's a diversion.
No, I mean, it was impossible, wasn't it, not to just, like, feel... absolute an outpouring of kind of, I guess it's kind of love for the guy, because he's been part of my life since I was 24, 25 years of age, and through accident much more than design, so much of my life now is wrapped up around Arsenal and Arsene Wenger. I don't, you know, I've never written so much stuff about one man. I don't think I ever will again. Is it surely impossible for me to write more about any other man than him? And, you know, just seeing him standing there, taking in the occasion, you know, when he says, I'll miss you. Oh, man.
Oh, goodness me. But by the time he got to miss you, I'll miss you, it was all over. But, you know, like that big Esquire interview last year, Andrew, where you just got more of him as a philosopher and how he feels about football. I think, I mean, we've touched on this not half as eloquently earlier on in the podcast, but when he says this is more than just watching football, it's a way of life, it's caring about a beautiful game, about the values we cherish, and as well that's something that goes for all our bodies in every cell of our bodies.
Yeah.
Hold me.
That was there though, wasn't it? That was in the stadium. You could feel that current around the stadium yesterday as people sang one Arsene Wenger, as he spoke, as they applauded, you know, after almost every line. He's right. It is something that goes through all our bodies. And
there was also an element of understanding. And I mean, I saw his very generous kind of message with the press, who, you know, a lot of them who've exempted themselves from everything, as they always do, perhaps. And that doesn't apply to the good guys, I might add. But the generosity of him, you know, I know it hasn't always been easy. I know you've had this 22 years of me. You know, there was a kind of wry humour in his address to us and so forth as well. So I just don't think that you can separate the fact that he's just a really decent bloke from the fact that he's a football manager who's disappointed you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, sorry about that, but you know, here's a decent guy who has tried to put some incredible values into the people who've played for him, and the love that those players in general have shown back to him can't be worth ignoring, basically. No. You know,
of course, I mean, I think he's had an impact on people's lives from a sporting point of view, but from a personal point of view, I mean, you're talking about somebody that when you hear him speak, it's almost impossible to disagree with him. I'm saying I agree with everything he ever said, but you can usually see a rationale to the things that he says, whether you agree with them or not. Okay, I wouldn't have done it that way, but he decided to do it that way, and that's why he did it. And yeah, I think just the overall decency of him, he comes across as a man with real dignity, intelligent, erudite, speaks as well in his second language as most people do in their first. You know, I think as somebody... You know, we like to think of Arsenal as an institution, right? An institution that we're invested in. And I think, for me anyway, he has enhanced the reputation of that institution over the course of his 22 years, regardless of the things that might or might not have gone as well as we would have liked.
Yep, absolutely well said. I mean, I loved Andrew. Everyone loved Andrew Allen's blog the other day.
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it?
With those moments. Have you got an off-key one, like maybe not one of the normal ones that he didn't mention on there, just as an illustration of the fact that he has given us so many amazing moments? But yeah, just as a bit of fun, have you got a moment that wasn't mentioned in Andrew's brilliant blog?
God, I'd have to go back and read the blog. It's kind of hard to pick them out. There was so much in that. There was so much detail in that, wasn't there? You know, I always liked where he was self-deprecating, because he was capable of that quite often. His humor was always really good. You know, I sort of like where he always stuck up for what he believed in and stuck up for Arsenal. I think I won't say it's a favourite thing, but perhaps a thing that maybe illustrates what kind of a guy he is. Remember a couple of years ago, there was a European game we played where one of their players failed a drug test. And I think he said something along the lines of, you know, in any other sport, if you fail a drug test, well, you know, the results should go the other way. I can't remember whether we won or lost that game, but he was asked about it in his press conference, and he was asked about doping in football, and he spoke on the record about doping in football and about how it is something that we have to pay attention to. No other manager, not one single manager, ever said a word about that. They never said a word about doping. 2 days later, UEFA send a 10-man delegation to the Arsenal training ground to dope test all of our players. Because that's what they do. And that's a message. But he still believed in what he was saying and was prepared to say it, even though he knew there would probably be those kind of consequences.
And he never ducked anything. I mean, apart from talking about, you know, stuff involved with his job, he's been asked about referendums, dictatorships. He's been asked about every single...
David Bowie? That was brilliant. I love the David Bowie thing.
Is there an Arsene comment on Prince? I don't know if there was, but they probably... I bet somebody asked him.
Purple Paisley Delight.
some great qualities. Yeah. It's he never...
played guitar with not his handbrake on.
But he, you know, he gave himself in that kind of way, and he's been an absolute delight. I mean, lampooned by the same people who asked him the stupid questions. But you know what? As you said earlier on, fuck those guys today. It's about an excellent man on an excellent occasion yesterday. And I am excited about next season, Andrew.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think that's part of what was interesting about yesterday was, as much as people were there to celebrate Arsene Wenger, there was an undercurrent of this is kind of exciting because something new is going to happen and something fresh and everything else. So yeah, I'm definitely excited by that.
Yeah, new players will come in. Old players or existing players will, as I say, have to change their attitude and up their game because there is not the safety net of someone who believes in them, and that's going to make it really exciting for us to watch next season.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're going to take a little short break here, eat
the rest of the pastries,
have a little bit more of the Prosecco, and we'll come back with questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at DJ Tayo and at Arsblog. Not on Facebook today because I just haven't got around to posting it on Facebook. So sorry, Facebook people. You're going to have to be content with all the other weeks when we don't answer the questions from Facebook either. Right, I'm going to start. This one comes from Dave Keegan. And he wants to know, he says, it was a classy touch by the club to present Wenger with the Invincibles trophy. But such is his humility, do you think Arsenal will bequeath the trophy back to the club in his last will and testament? I mean, what do you think, A, of giving him that trophy, and B, like, what's he going to do with it? Do you think he'll just give it back to the club? He's not going to, like, put it in his jacks, is he?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't think... It was a classy thing to do to give it to him. They had to give him something. I mean, they're not going to give him a gold watch, are they? You know?
And here is a lovely carriage clock for all your service.
It was it's a symbol of
his greatest achievement.
Exactly that, of his greatest achievement, and so it was fitting that it was part of the presentation. But yeah, I wouldn't be remotely surprised if he turned around and gave it back to the club, because he did it for the club, and it was nice seeing a few of those Invincibles there. I mean, I booed myself hoarse with Canoe.
Yeah, there. He came on the screen.
Oh God, that was amazing, and to see Ralph as well. While we're talking about Invincibles. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, but my God, how handsome did he look?
Bobby.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
There was a moment where he came on the screen and I was just like, there's a picture of, someone posted a picture, I think it's Petit, Saul Campbell, Robert Pires, Freddie Ljungberg and Laren all together. I'm looking at it going, okay, I can see some of these guys are getting a bit older, but holy shit, Robert Pires looks amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, Freddie was in good nick as well. Gilles Grimandi is getting more and more French by the more French by the day.
I haven't seen Gilles Grimandi for a while.
He was there. He was, I mean, I love seeing Ralph as well.
Fills out that shirt, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. A great collection of players symbolised by that great trophy for his greatest achievement. So yeah, I do think it's fitting that they gave it to him. And I love the fact that it was Pat Rice.
Well, they were bomb-proof, weren't they? Pat Rice and Bob Wilson. You know, I guess there must have been some measure of anxiousness on the club's behalf as to how it might go, just in case, because things have been so fractious. And there is perhaps an element who might have made it into something it shouldn't have been. So you bring out Bob Wilson, you bring out Pat Rice. Like, what kind of an asshole would you have to be to, like, have a problem with those two? You have to be the biggest asshole. So
we've had. I've got one for you. This is from Tom Servo Jones. There's been a few of this. I've just picked out his one. Do you think it's a bit extreme that some of our fan base are vilifying club legends like Ozil and Henry for not participating yesterday? We've touched on Thierry. You touched on him in the first half. But, of course, Ozil wasn't there yesterday.
I think he was.
Oh?
Yeah. In the lineup of players, I was watching Match of the Day 2 last night. And if you pause, just as it's kind of fading into a different shot, I think Mesut Ozil is there wearing a cap and a tracksuit and that kind of stuff. So I think he was there, and I think he was there on the lap of appreciation.
I guess I wanted to bring out the fact, I wanted to mention him anyway, because of course in the week he was very much dug out by another club legend, Martin Keown, who called it. I think we all knew. He said he will be ill on Sunday, don't you worry about that. I mean, any thoughts on that?
I think maybe Mesut Ozil is one of those players who needs to be treated differently from other players. I remember seeing one of those, one of the Soccer AM type things where they go like, who's this guy? Who's the best trainer? Who's the teacher's pet? It was Aaron Ramsey, I think, talking. He said, yeah, Mesut Ozil, he's the teacher's pet. He just goes into Arsene's office and, you know, whatever he wants, he gets. And I think there's been an element of that with Mesut Ozil that perhaps Arsene has decided that he can be treated that way, or he will treat him in that way. That maybe a different manager would have a different outlook on that kind of thing. Maybe wouldn't be as indulgent in some of the things that he does. You know, when a manager talks about a player being missing because of illness or a back problem, you're immediately on suspicion, right?
Yeah,
he's definitely ill. What does that mean? Like, he's got a calf strain. He'll be out for 3 weeks. He's got a groin dicky, hoo hickey, whatever. You know, those are specific things. But a back problem, yeah.
Which can miraculously clear up. Absolutely. But, clubs have always had players like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Wrighty talks very funnily about... I think it's with George Graham, or maybe it's with Arsene Wenger. I'm not quite sure. It probably would be with George Graham, wouldn't it? That he just, you know, he got a little bit of a pass because he was the one banging in all the goals. And they all say that Tony Adams could just stroll around and do what he wants. Got the contracts he wants. So people are always going to have their favourites. So, but it is interesting that I did think it was interesting the way that Martin Keown came out like that. And it'll be interesting to have someone like Martin Keown in the dressing room 4 days when things don't go that well for a luxury player. You do leave yourself open to it, don't you?
Yeah, you do, but I think it's to do with the style of play. You know, I'm not sure everything Keown said was particularly right. You know, whatever he said about him having an emotional breakdown or whatever that was, I don't think there was any need for that. Yeah, I think you can question perhaps some of his availability, you know, when the game is
definitely
away from home and it's up north. Chances are Mesut Ozil might have a little bit of a back problem, or he might be ill. You know, we either have the world's most brittle-backed sickly player, or there is just a little bit of indulgence going on there. And I guess people will accept that if in big, big, big games, Ozil is a guy who's going to pull you through them. I'm not sure that's necessarily been the case. I mean, I really like him as a player. I think he's a fantastic player. I think, you know, when you look at around Europe at the creative players, he's certainly one of them. And I think maybe he is someone also who could benefit from a different system and benefit from a different manager who maybe pushes him to get more out of him, or maybe decides he needs different players around him to get the best out of him. Perhaps that's what it is. But yeah, he's a target, I think, for some fans because of his style and because of just the general unavailability at times. So...
me or you?
I think it's me. We've got here one from Clive PAFC. Clive, who's on the Arsenal Vision podcast, and he says, do you think Arsenal failed Arsene Wenger as an employer? We were weak and we let his career derail. No way should that man be walking out of our club with all that knowledge. That's not how you build organisations. We should have been firmer years ago. And also, do you think Wenger will return?
I mean, he'll return as a fan, sure, and take his seat in the director's box, I'm sure, just to watch a game. Did the club fail Arsene Wenger? That's really interesting because we keep on hearing about how much influence he had on the club and maybe an overbearing one as such. So in that sense, the club failed themselves by letting it get to the situation where one man...
It's all right. We can have phone noises on this podcast.
Okay, we can have fun noises.
Yeah.
The club failed him by letting it get to the situation, or failed us for letting things get to the situation where he's in a position to ask to plot his own downfall. Show me a man or woman in any field who is going to be able to negotiate their own departure as well as someone. Sometimes you need someone else to turn around and say, you know what, we saw it with Brian Clough. Not everyone can... Sir Alex Ferguson had two goes at it before he finally got out the door on his own volition. So, yeah, maybe the club have got a level of responsibility in the situation that we ended up in. If Arsene Wenger had wanted to walk away, or had been able to walk away after one of the recent cup finals, were we in a position to get a replacement? Were we in a position to kick on from there?
Yeah.
Or, and it's all speculation, perhaps did he stay on because he was he ever asked to stay on because, you know what, we're not ready yet, we need to get stuff in place?
The book.
Maybe we'll find out these things. So, yeah, there has been, and I think that was shown in some of the reaction, which we've already talked about yesterday as well. There's culpability in the boardroom as well for the situation that we're in. But, I mean, look, I'm an unashamed Arsene apologist, clearly, but while recognising his faults, of course. But it's not just on him, the situation, I don't think.
No, I agree. I agree. I think as well we have to look back maybe at the way everything unfolded when the Dean and Kroenke stuff went down, right? That was a bolt from the blue. That was a real bolt from the blue. And all of a sudden, David Dean, who's Wenger's basically a sounding board in many ways, but also a man who can get things done, is gone from the club because of the way that he wanted to bring Kroenke in, then wanted to bring Usmanov in. You know, he created this kind of vacuum at board level where all of a sudden the guy who would push Wenger to do things was no longer there. Wenger then was the guy who appointed his replacement. There were all kinds of, it took maybe what, 18 months or so, 2 years perhaps, to appoint Ivan Gazidis. And Gazidis has always been inferior, is that, that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean, he has not had the same kind of influence that David Dean had. He didn't have the same influence over Wenger. I think over the years Gazidis and Wenger's relationship has been difficult.
Yeah, absolutely, that's definitely come across, and there's been statements where Gazidis has tried to distance himself from the boss. And I know you've been critical of that. I also remember you being very critical of David Dean at the time. Not very critical of David Dean, but I remember you questioning the fact that he'd brought this kind of discord into the club.
You could see what he was trying to do now. With hindsight, you could see what he was trying to do because he could recognise that with Chelsea, with this kind of new development in oil money, that Arsenal were probably going to need something more than just what the Emirates Stadium was going to bring. I think it was the way he did it more than anything. And ultimately, it was Dean who brought Kroenke on board. When the board found out what was going on with Kroenke, they shafted Dean. Dean then went and got in bed with Usmanov. And now this is where the Arsenal Cold War comes from. Well, you know, at the end of the day, David Dean got, what, 75, 80 million pounds for his Arsenal shares. So, you know, the consequences of that weren't just this boardroom schism. They created this power vacuum into which Arsene Wenger inserted himself in many ways, that he became the most powerful figure at the club in all things football. And that has been part of why we haven't won the title since 2004. It definitely is. It's only now, perhaps, that the board are beginning to feel emboldened enough or strong enough to make decisions that they should have made a few years ago, I think.
Jonas Emterval, I hope I've said that properly, Jonas Emterval asks, if you could ask Arsene one question about a specific event during his Arsenal years, and he, no matter what, would give you a detailed and honest answer, what would it be?
I think we did this a couple of weeks ago. It would be the summer of 2011. Yeah, with Nasri and Cesc and the shopping. Like, how could any club, how could we sit there as only fans knowing that Fabregas was going to leave, Nasri was going to leave? We knew that. The club knew that. If we knew it, the club knew it. Why didn't they do more that summer? What was the dynamic that went on? I remember speaking to somebody quite close to everything that went on there who was critical of the way that the Arsenal board acted at that time. Things could have been done in a more timely fashion had, for example, certain people, not the manager, not gone on holidays, right? When there was negotiations going on.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. That they were delayed and delayed. And, you know, Wenger's famous quote at the time, isn't it? You can't be considered a big club if you let Fabregas and Nasri go. He didn't say that as a stupid man. He said that knowing fine well that it was probably going to happen. So was that a message to the board? I'd love to know what went on there.
I think for me, around the same time, because we're talking about a critical period, what did you and Van Persie chat about?
Mm.
Please, because of all the things that happened in the recent... I mean, that was a real one for me.
Did you always have, like, this faith? I always... Maybe it was misguided or not, but I always thought that when Van Persie, when Fabregas would sit down with Arsene Wenger, he would be able to convince them that this was the wrong thing to do. The reason you should stay at Arsenal is X, Y, and Z, because I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. We are, as a club, going to do that. Have trust in me as a manager to do that. Maybe that was, I won't say the beginning of the end, but when players like Fabregas and like Van Persie, who, you know, will talk openly about how much they owe Arsene Wenger and how big an influence he's been on their careers, where they had to make decisions that were not necessarily easy decisions to make in many ways.
Fabregas, I've always been a little less harsh on Fabregas than for a start. I know you have, for example. Yeah. Van Persie, one I think I've also said before on various platforms, that's the one that slayed me. Fabregas going to Barcelona makes sense to me.
Mm.
Van Persie going to them after scoring 37 goals and then winning them the league single-handedly just destroyed me. It still does. And I'd love to know what that conversation was and why it couldn't have been avoided.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question from... This one comes from Duddy, who's at Rick Duddy, who says, what song would you play over a montage of Wenger's finest moments?
I love this because in my head yesterday, I was... I had the streets Dry Your Eyes, Mate, you know. Anyway, but that's been trumped this morning. And this is clearly what Twitter was invented for. Andy Hart has put up Arsene's the walk out onto the pitch to the music of, to the ending credits of Gomorrah.
That is some TV series, that.
Which is why, I mean, it's a potential Hall of Famer in TV, and we should really do a mini series podcast at another time.
Yeah.
But it is very fitting to put the music to the ending credits of Gomorrah. If you haven't seen Gomorrah, you need to. If you haven't seen Andy Haar's tweet, you need to do that as well.
Mm. Yeah, James Wilkinson, who's at James Wilksy, replies David Bowie Heroes, which of course is just one of those. It's slightly anthemic. I don't know what I'd actually pick. I'd have to go through my iTunes library, you know, that way. I'm pretty confident I could find the right piece of music, but off the top of my head, I'm struggling a little bit with this one.
Okay, cool. Let me see what I've got for you. I mean, saving one of the best for last. Timmy's at Timmy's 77 has sent a couple of wonderful tweets. I'll just mention the first one, which is Oliver Holt. How does a man this simple manage to feed himself? I just like it because it's funny. It doesn't even need an answer. But one that does need an answer is, how many of your internal organs did you cough up while laughing at Shawcross and the Legion of Orcs?
A lot of them. A lot of them. That was, if we're talking about setting up a weekend of celebration, to see that happen before we were going to say goodbye to Arsene Wenger was just something else, wasn't it? If you could write a script about, okay, Stoke getting relegated. I remember I saw people last week on Twitter talking about, if it comes down to it on the final day, would you happily accept a defeat to Huddersfield if it meant Stoke going down?
Yep.
I would have.
Yes.
I absolutely 100%. Would have. I always want my team to win. I always want my team to win. But, you know, in the context of everything that's going on, I would have absolutely, absolutely taken. But
I mean, I messaged you on Saturday, didn't I? I said, I really should. It was a sunny day. I was at a lovely 40th birthday party out in the countryside. I could hear the birds outside, the barbecue going. And there I was scrolling through Arsenal Twitter with the hashtag StokeFC, laughing my head off, enjoying every second of it. I just want to, Stoke City FC at Stoke City, the official account. I just want to read it. 86 minute goal, Palace. City open as they search for a goal. Shawcross attempts to cut it out.
Instead, Shawcross provides the assist of the season, because he would have been offside.
Setting up Van Aanholt, who scores? Brackets 1-2, hashtag FCFC. And I just put, tell me, like, if you do it in your best kind of Charlie Murphy voice, I challenge you, tell me a better moment than that. It was glorious. Does that make it small-minded? Does it make me a small-minded football fan? Yes. Is that the point of football? Sometimes. Isn't that the entire existence of Twitter for moments like this? Yes. Mm. It was brilliant. Good luck to them. Good riddance. Are we hanging on to it for too long? Probably. But have they hung on to it for too long? Definitely.
Aaron Ramsey, he walks with a limp. Limp your way down to the championship, you they, fuckers.
You said it yourself. Fuck those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. It really was. It was just beautiful. I loved the desperate lunge to get the ball, whereas if he just left it, Van Aanholt was going to be on offside. It wouldn't have mattered. But instead, karma has come back. This is retribution for what happened all those years ago with Aaron Ramsey.
Just take your time and good things will come in the end. We waited for this.
Yeah. Do you think after the game that Ryan Shawcross's mum came to pick him up?
He had a better reason to cry this time. Yeah, no. I did see something else hilarious. I can't find it at the moment. A really funny thing about it. If you take Shaqiri's career in reverse, it reads amazingly.
Where did he start? Because we have a question here about whether would you take Shaqiri because he's got a, he can take a good free kick now and again. I think my answer is no. I prefer my players to be a little less barrel shaped than Shaqiri. I'm looking it up here. Okay, he started at FC Basel, Bayern Munich, Inter Milan, Stoke City. And now I presume he'll be off in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's too good for them, but he's not good enough for, I think he'd do well at another half-promoted club. Here it is. Shaqiri's career in reverse is brilliant. Establishes Stoke as a mid-table side, gets noticed after scoring the goal of the tournament at Euro 2016, spends a season at Inter before joining Bayern Munich, where he wins the treble, then ends his career with his home club in Basel. So that's a sensational career in reverse. But no, I wouldn't take him either.
No. But I think we're missing the point here. We shouldn't be talking about Shaqiri. We should be talking about Shawcross and still laughing at his misfortune. His face at the final whistle was an absolute picture. I got a screenshot, which I will cherish. I might get a fucking t-shirt made out of it. You know what? Actually, I might do like they do with a royal wedding. I might get a series of commemorative plates.
Make up some placemats. Crying
Shawcross. He's not crying. He's just like, oh no.
Commemorative Shawcross plate.
He's going, what club will I join this summer as I walk away from this fucking mess that I caused?
He created, basically. Fuck those guys. They're gone.
Fuck those guys. Okay. This one comes from 49, who's at Scott's 84, and he says, when do you think it's correct for the club to announce Arsene's successor, and with season ticket renewals coming up, how big is it that Ivan Gazidis and co get the right man in first time?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if they did it almost in the week after the last game? We've got a World Cup. We've got a World Cup coming up. We've got players who want to know we're hamstrung enough because we have finished sixth and we're going to be playing in the Europa League. So we need to have something as much as possible to encourage teams to get on board early. I think one of the less good things about Arsene's reign is just how late it was that we did our business. It would be great if the club did it straight away and carried on riding this, you know, wave of optimism, really. You know, it'd be a shame to let it die off over a long, you know, taking their time with it and letting it drag on into the World Cup, I think.
Yeah, I think next week. I wonder if we might get something this week. Something might start to leak out towards the end of the week because it is a World Cup summer. It is a truncated transfer window as well, isn't it? Because it closes before the season starts. It's only in the Premier League or it's only in England. Other clubs in Europe have not applied the same rules. So this is something that's going to be a bit more challenging for English clubs. And we know ourselves about transfers and how difficult we've made them at times. But have you got any preference as to who it should be or who it might be? Do you care? Are you just happy to wait and see who they announce and then go, oh, that's amazing, or, oh, you assholes?
There are people who know far more about football and this stuff than me. You know, ask Andy Brassell, ask those people who watch European football and know these things inside out. Part of me will be excited by... I would love for Patrick Vieira to be amazing immediately, but it's also a huge risk to take. Everyone mentions Allegri. Somebody mentioned Jardim to me yesterday as well. I don't know enough about it. I would be... As long as it's not Brendan Rodgers, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I would still love it to be... I can't even say the Owen Coyle thing again because people start taking me seriously. I don't know. I don't want it to be Brendan Rodgers. I want them to get it right because we don't want to... We want to avoid the Moisification of our club. So let's trust the pros.
Yeah, we'll see what they do. Hearing a bit of chatter about Mikel Arteta as well, which would be a risk. It'd be a brave appointment.
It'd be a fantastic. I mean, I was really excited by that. But you know what? A lot of great talent has leaked out of the club for whatever reason over the years, and. It'd be nice to see some of those back. Mikel Arteta, Patrick Vieira, in any kind of role. I mean, you know, it's oft talked about the Bayern Munich model of how they surround themselves with ex-players. I would love to see that at the club. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, have you got one more question or should we leave it there? Whatever you like.
Yeah. There was a captain question. We'll leave that one. So why don't we just... let's just end on a positive note.
Yeah.
From Yonri at 2-0 to the Arsenal to both of us. What did Arsene mean to you? Has he had any impact on you outside of football?
Yeah, I think he has, because of simply when you're exposed to somebody, I don't think that's the right way of putting it, but when someone is that much a part of your life, whether you're just an Arsenal fan or whether you're like me and you write about Arsenal all the time, it's impossible not to pick up things from somebody. I remember at the time when he was appointed going, I was like, Arsene who? I don't know who that is. You know, we were looking at the poor man's internet back in the day, CFAX, to find out who was going to be the manager. It was all Johan Cruyff. It was just unthinkable to me that it would be anybody other than Johan Cruyff. They brought in Arsene Wenger and it was, okay, well, I don't quite know what this guy is or who he is. And maybe it teaches you that first impressions or what you think are your first impressions aren't necessarily the best thing. You know, you need to judge people by what they do and how they do it and what they achieve or don't. But don't go into things with preconceived notions about people that just because he was French, which was a thing back then, because he wore glasses, he looked like a bit of a... Professor was a nice way of saying nerd, right? That's the way it was back then. And he didn't look like a football manager. He didn't look like somebody who could manage a team successfully because of the way English football was, in a way. So I think if the impact he's had on me is to judge people by what they do, not on how you think they look or what you think is their suitability for something, you know, judge them on what they do. And I think over the 22 years, I've said this time and time again, I've had some of the best times of my life under Arsene Wenger. Some of the biggest football frustrations as well. I mean, there's no question about that. But more than anything, I will remember the first double. I remember sitting in a hotel room in Galway. We were out clubbing down there and it was a Sunday and everyone wanted to go home and this was a 4 o'clock game on a Sunday. It was a beautiful day and they're going, come on. I'm going, no, I'm fucking staying here. I'm going to watch this because we're about to win the title here at home. You know, that and the 2002 and Robert Pires and 2003 FA Cup and the Invincibles. You know, even the Champions League final, as disappointing as it was, is just something that will always live with me. So, you know, he's meant a lot to me. He's meant a lot to me, and I think he's had a big impact on my life, on my career, and I was just glad to be there yesterday to say thank you in whatever small way that was, standing up and clapping while he walked around the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, And again, there's a good and bad in this as well. I mean, you can call it stubbornness, or you can call it a belief in an absolute unwavering belief in a principle. And it has been, it's been arguably, if you can call it a downfall, it's been his downfall, because there are times when you are screaming out for him to change or adapt in a way, you know, that the wind was blowing, but he's stuck steadfastly to his beliefs, not only because they're not only footballing beliefs, they're beliefs about how you should live your life and how he's tried to live his. And again, I think we said it's hard to criticize someone who just, who absolutely believes in there is a way of doing things. So,
yeah.
And so if there's anything, then yeah, that kind of trusting of your instincts.
Yeah.
Is something that I'll take away from that. And I mean, just the, yeah, the, that comes across. I mean, I've, you know, I've been fortunate enough to meet him a couple of times, and the, a couple of times that we've been, that everyone is reduced to nodding dogs, you know, because you see that, you know, I think when we were there, Keown still calls him boss, like even, you know, he doesn't have to. So, but that comes from, because what he is telling you, he's telling you an absolute conviction that he believes in what he is saying. And that's an impressive thing. So yeah, it's a good way of finishing, just saying, thanks, mate.
Yeah, thanks. It was, it's been a hell of a ride, hasn't it?
Yeah. Oh God, hold me. We better finish the Prosecco. I'm getting embarrassed. I'm getting shy again. I'm getting emotional.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. Really appreciate it. Thank you to Tony and Nick for the Prosecco. It's gone down very well indeed. Thank you to Arsene Wenger. We'll catch you on the far side. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.